Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, September 5th. Continuing on with Grant Hill Week here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your boy Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine on the commute, the morning grind, the gym, wherever you are listening today. Today we're going to be talking about more about Grant Hill as the former Pistons great, headed to the Hall of Fame on Friday night in Springfield, Massachusetts. More about his post-Pistons playing career. Today we're going to talk to Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic about phase two of Grant Hill's career, his time with the Orlando Magic, and a new way for you guys to get in touch with us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. You can call and leave a voice message or text this number, and we'll have your 2 cents, and we might use it on the air. Make sure you leave your name and where you live as well so we can give you proper credit. The number there is 810-666-1546. Again, 810-666-1546, 1546. Easy to remember as we get the 810 area code up in Macomb County in the Blue Water area there. I looked for the Google voice numbers, none available in 313, so I went out to 248, didn't find anything there, but I did find some in 586 and 810, so I picked the 810 number as a nod to my former life in the Blue Water area in Port Huron, Michigan. So what's up to everyone on the east side there? 810-666-1546. Easy to remember. 810 area code, 666, sign of the beast, of course. And then Vinnie Johnson, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills, 1546. So that's how to get in touch with the show. And let me know your thoughts on Grant Hill as this induction ceremony approaches on Friday night. Kind of a lightning rod in some ways with Pistons fans. We threw out the question, does he deserve to have his number retired with the Detroit Pistons? Maybe that's the wrong way of framing the question, not deserve. Maybe just should he have his number retired with the Detroit Pistons? I think a lot of strong opinions on both sides. I think it seems like my unofficial count seems to be more no's than yeses, but some strong feelings on no's and some strong feelings on yeses. Just kind of an interesting career, especially as it pertains to his Detroit Pistons time. And as we'll talk to Philip Rossman-Reich, very interesting when it comes to his time in Orlando, too. A lot of similarities talking about Grant Hill's time there. And you remember the injuries that Grant Hill had when he was a member of the Magic. And we'll get into those big time with Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic as well. But do you have a man cave that needs sprucing up? Or do you want to go out and play a round of golf but don't have 5 hours to play 18? Or are you looking for more gear to represent the city of Detroit? I know many of you listening can say yes to at least one of these questions, probably all three. Jim and Ann at Detroit Sports Collectibles have you covered on all of these fronts. Jim and Ann have all sorts of collectibles for your man cave. Pistons posters. Remember the poster of Laimbeer and Mahorn dressed in black with the deflated basketballs and the dark shades and the rim torn down? They've got that if I don't get there first. NASCAR stuff, baseball, basketball, the free press posters from the Detroit Championships, football figurines of your favorite players, all sorts of hats. You got to see this place with your own eyes. Jim and Ann are there on weekends, Friday from 10 to 3 p.m., Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5 p.m., but make an appointment and they'll meet you up there anytime throughout the week after 5 p.m., Monday through Thursday. They will be there for you. Even better, tell them you heard about their store on Locked On Pistons. They will give you 10% off your order. They are at 661 South Main Street in Clawson. Plus, you can order items at DetroitCollectibles.net. Check out their website. I promise you'll find something that you didn't know that you definitely need. Support Jim and Ann at Detroit Sports Collectibles. Detroit, support Michigan and Detroit small businesses, and in turn, support the Locked On Pistons podcast. Check out Detroit Sports Collectibles at 661 South Main Street in Clawson, south of 14 Mile, and at DetroitCollectibles.net. Phone number 844-238-6277 to make one of those appointments. Or again, 844-238-6277. Thank you for supporting part of our team. And like we've said, Ray Allen, Maurice Cheeks, former Pistons coach, Grant Hill, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Charlie Scott, those are the players, and also some contributors like Rod Thorne and WNBA players such as Katie Smith and Tina Thompson, the European player, Dino Raja, going into the Hall of Fame this weekend in Springfield, Massachusetts. Brendan Welper, who was on the show yesterday, pointed out that it's a good trip if anyone wants to get out to Massachusetts sometime and check out the Hall of Fame with their own two eyes, that it's a worthy trip to check out the Hoop Hall. 7 o'clock Eastern time on Springfield, Massachusetts on NBA TV. You can check out the induction ceremony. Always a fun night. Should be some eloquent and really cerebral speakers there with the guys like Ray Allen and Grant Hill and Steve Nash. Maybe not the clowns that we've had in some other years, like Dennis Rodman. The unpredictability factor might be not as be as high as an Allen Iverson or Shaquille O'Neal or guys like that. But it should be very well done, and we'll have our eyes on that. But some more news from the Lockdown Network coming this week for local sports fans, especially of the maize and blue variety. The Lockdown Network has hit campus for Lockdown Colleges, Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, BYU. Go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and follow for free. It is the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And up next, we're going to be talking to Philip Rossman Reich of Locked On Magic. Got a long conversation with him. We're going to cut that off just like we did with Brendan Welper's conversation. We'll have part twos of those conversations. I'm thinking maybe this weekend I'll throw up a bonus episode with more talk about the current Pistons, the current Magic. Really interesting conversation with Philip Rossman Reich that I enjoyed talking to him. Thanks to him for taking the time. And we will get into it with him in a long form. And like I said, we'll put up the part two maybe as a bonus episode this weekend as well. And you've heard me talk about advertising, looking for advertisers. If you know anyone who wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, 98% men and 80% in that very important demographic, get in touch with me about supporting the Locked On Pistons podcast. My email is Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
And you are indeed Locked On Magic. My name is Philip Rossman Reich. I'm the expert and site editor over at OrlandoMagicDaily.com and the host of Locked On Magic. You can follow me on Twitter at PhilipRR_OMD. And this week is, at least in my opinion, a week of celebration for Orlando Magic fans. I know it's a week of celebration for Detroit Pistons fans. It is Hall of Fame week. Grant Hill heading into the Hall of Fame. And I thought it would be a great time to discuss Grant Hill and his entire career with Matt Schoch of Locked On Pistons. Matt, I pronounced your last name right. I forgot to check before we started recording.
Yeah, it's actually Schoch, but no worries. Schoch. You're only the millionth person that's ever got it wrong in my life.
See, this is why you got to go through these things before the show starts so you don't get embarrassed like that.
Oh, not a problem.
Matt, obviously, Grant Hill, one of the kind of, for Magic fans, one of the great unfulfilled promises, I think, as far as what he did in his career. But when it was announced that Grant Hill was making the Hall of Fame, what was your reaction? What was Pistons fans' reaction to that announcement?
You know, it's funny, Philip, that you mentioned that. And I was looking at, and obviously his history in Orlando is pretty well known around the league. But when you say unfulfilled promise, it's actually pretty similar here in Detroit in terms of the unfulfilled promises on different levels, of course. But when he was drafted, third overall in the draft in 1994, he came in with such a just guns ablazing. He was outstanding. He was a ready-made star already after four great years at Duke, national championship games, all that kind of stuff. And then he came in, he had the Sprite deal. He was the highest vote getter in the All-Star game in 1994 as a rookie, which is completely unheard of when there's superstars in the league already that have established themselves and whatnot. 6 years in the NBA with the Pistons, and really one of the great players of that era, no doubt about it. But this is a team that never get out of the first round of the playoffs. And in year two, first time in the NBA playoffs, that was at the hands of Penny and Shaq in Orlando, a sweep, but one that was a positive sweep for the Pistons. They had been in the playoffs for the first time since the Bad Boys era ended, and really gave Penny and Shaq some pretty good games in that three-game sweep that they had at the hands of Orlando. So at that point, they had Allen Houston and Lindsey Hunter after their third seasons, Grant Hill coming off of a strong year two. Things were looking good. Then Allen Houston leaves that offseason to go to the Knicks, and the Pistons really come back, and Doug Collins comes in. They have an outstanding season the next year as well, and they have, even though Allen Houston's gone, they got what Grant called the best spirit of togetherness team he ever had in the league other than his college and then 1 year that he had with the Suns later on in his career as well, but they lost to Atlanta in five games. And then over the next 3 years. Grant went down with some injuries the following season, and his last 2 years they lost to Atlanta once again in five, and then Miami in a sweep before he leaves for greener pastures down south. But like you said, an unfulfilled promise. I mean, such a great start to his career with Detroit, and then kind of fizzles out. The team around him was never good enough. The organization at that point was coming off of the post Bad Boys era, and it was never good enough. And it turns out, as we'll talk about here, the trade that ultimately brought Grant Hill down to Orlando and what was essentially was a free agent acquisition thought of at the time. And then I woke up one morning and read the Free Press and figured out that, oh, wait a minute, he didn't sign with Orlando. He was actually traded to Orlando for a couple guys that we'd barely heard of in Ben Wallace and Chucky Atkins. And that ended up kind of boosting up the Pistons' next era of championship basketball after Grant left.
Yeah, I just had to give him that extra bit of money and give him that super max deal that full max bird rights max that signing trades allowed them to have and obviously set up the Pistons for their next title runs. I always feel like because of the 6 years in Orlando where he really struggled to get off the bench and getting that second wind in Phoenix where he was playing off the bench for the most part, wasn't quite the same player. I always feel like people forget how staggering his numbers were with the Pistons those six seasons. 21.6 points per game, 7.9 rebounds per game, 6.3 assists per game. He had a 48% effective field goal percentage for a high usage player who didn't shoot a lot of threes. That was pretty incredible. And I remember the stats that were coming out about Grant Hill were he was putting up combinations of numbers that really hadn't been seen since Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson. I mean, I was talking with someone earlier today when we're recording this on a Tuesday night that Grant Hill was really kind of doing, not as physically imposing, was really kind of doing what LeBron James has done throughout his career in the mid-90s. He was just this all-encompassing player who could do it all and was putting up numbers that really no one had put up, at certainly at his size and height, since Magic Johnson, Oscar Robertson, and that's pretty elite company to be hanging out with.
Yeah, it's a credit to all his skills. I think he was the first point forward, you know, so-called that we hear so much about in the league now. But that was a credit to the skills that he had. He developed even a little bit of a post game down at Duke as well. So he came in with that. He had the crossover dribble that everyone remembers in Detroit. He had the first crossover that, everyone talks about Iverson with classic break your ankles crossover. But Grant Hill's was just as effective. He could take that, go with either hand to the lane, score with both hands. He was, like you said, he had the assists. The Pistons recognized, to their credit, they recognized the fact that Grant Hill could do everything, so they asked him to do everything. They kind of constructed the roster around that with a point guard in Lindsey Hunter who didn't necessarily need or want the ball in his hands as much of a traditional point guard. They had big men such as Terry Mills, Loy Vaught, and Christian Laettner back at that time who definitely didn't need the ball in the post, and they were more spot-up shooters, more modern types of fours and fives in the NBA that could knock down some shots. So those guys could do well these days, but with a guy like Grant Hill, in some ways you wanted to kind of get out of his way. A little bit awkward at times with Jerry Stackhouse in his last 3 years in Detroit, kind of pair those guys as well as the last couple of years of Joe Dumars' career with the Detroit Pistons with Grant Hill kind of taking reins of the team. So, there were some years that it was tough to figure out and tough to watch and see who was going to go off on a certain time because you had Stack and Hill, both ball dominant players that needed to have the ball in their hands. But I can remember that last year, 99-2000, that Orlando was kind of clearing the books. And if I remember correctly, the offseason plan for the Magic was originally to, I think they had the cap space to bring in the two superstars and that they originally wanted to bring in Tim Duncan coming off of a championship in the lockout year and Grant Hill. And it seemed like there was a time when that was going to happen until the infamous story that Grant Hill told on TV this year about how Tim Duncan's now ex-wife wouldn't be allowed on the plane with the team, from what I understand. Would you think that was actually true, that was the backbreaker? Or do you think that's Grant Hill kind of seeing things, differently in history?
I have heard many stories about why the Magic didn't get Tim Duncan. I think that the girlfriend, the significant others traveling on the plane was one of many things that ultimately led Duncan to go back to San Antonio. I heard a story that, you know, the Magic in trying to wine and dine Tim Duncan did not order the food that Tim Duncan liked, and they were scrambling to find cold cuts, because Duncan's very, you know, plain guy. They had like a big spread ready for him, and like someone came and said, he doesn't want any of this. He just wants some basic cold cuts. And so they were scrambling to get that done. And I think at the end of the day, and I mean, I personally think that, you know, Duncan was looking for an excuse not to come to Orlando at the end of the day, because David Robinson cut his vacation short in Hawaii, flew to the Virgin Islands with Greg Popovich, and they kind of cornered Tim Duncan, got the last word in. And I think that's ultimately what swayed him to go back more than anything else. I think there were a number of things, like so much of Magic history, there were a number of things where the Magic left the door open for them to lose, and people who are smart about how to handle NBA players, especially because the Magic were still kind of a youngish franchise at the time, they knew how to exploit that probably a lot better than the Magic did at that time. But I mean, I think it certainly played a factor in eventually not allowing those two players to pair up, and the Magic had the cap room to get Grant Hill, Tracy McGrady, and Tim Duncan that summer. In fact, I think that sign and trade happened because Hill originally agreed to a lower amount, less than the full max. And when they didn't get Duncan, the Magic said, we've got this extra room now. We'll give you the full money if Detroit will agree to a sign and trade. And that's, I think, how that actually went down.
Yeah, I do remember that I couldn't place that into some Google search that I was doing, but I do remember that there was a short time there where it was thought that maybe all three of them would end up in Orlando. It would have been really the first super team before LeBron and company, maybe Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce were the first big three, but it would have been really ahead of its time with a dominant team looking like they could have gotten things going. But as it turns out, only McGrady and Hill end up in Orlando, and really from some of the abuse that Grant Hill put himself through with the Detroit Pistons, including that ankle, which was the first major injury that he had in Orlando, the three-game sweep with the Heat, a couple of games that he probably shouldn't have been playing in, and gutted through it, which is, it kind of ties back to the same thing that Detroit fans have with Grant Hill. A lot of fans mistakenly, in my opinion, and really not even a question about it, in my opinion, looking back, that, you know, he was just thought of as a soft player just because he wasn't an Isaiah Thomas. He wasn't Joe Dumars. He went to Duke. He came from a well-to-do family and all that stuff. It was really polished.
I mean, he was a very finesse player too, if I remember correctly. I mean, he had a lot of power, raw athleticism, explosiveness, but he was very much a finesse player. Like, he could work his way around the basket and kind of slash around guys. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't a bad boy Piston.
Yeah, he wasn't, but my point is that he certainly wasn't a soft player. He was a very tough player. He played through injuries. He was a different kind of player than maybe what Detroit was used to. But, you know, like I said, the end of his Pistons run kind of precluded to, you know, a rough time in Orlando, kind of right from the beginning, it seems like.
Yeah, because, I mean, when Grant Hill got off the plane to sign his contract with the Magic or to visit Orlando, he was on crutches coming off that injury during the playoffs the year before in 2000. And it's kind of a joke around town now that, you know, the Magic should never sign a player on crutches again. I mean, I think it didn't come to this, but if the Magic would have had the option to pick Joel Embiid, I remember saying at the time, this franchise will not draft or sign a player that's on crutches for the opening press conference. They're just not going to go through that again. But it's kind of interesting how you bring up that people consider Grant Hill kind of soft because, you know, obviously when you're out, when you're injured, when you can't play through an injury, you get that label on you. And I feel like some Magic fans still, or at least certainly at the time, Magic fans believed that Hill was not doing everything he could to get back on the floor. And that was obviously not true. And I think one thing that a lot of Magic fans don't know or forget, perhaps, as was revealed in a Sports Illustrated article when he was with the Suns, Grant Hill nearly died trying to play basketball for this team. He got a staph infection after one of his surgeries, just trying to come back too quickly, and was literally 110 fever, like nearly dying on the operating table, and was saved. I mean, it's a pretty incredible story. I'll try and find the link and share it share it through at least my social media channels. I just remember reading and just being horrified. And Grant Hill was a guy who I think he felt the weight of the massive contract that he signed. He felt the burden that Tracy McGrady was feeling trying to carry a team where the Magic really couldn't do anything financially with his contract also on the books. And I think part of the reason Grant Hill only played, let's look like what, 47 games in his first 3 years in Orlando. I think a big reason for that is because Grant Hill was too determined to come back too quickly. And the Magic just, and it obviously hurt himself in the process to doing that. And it seems like that's something that he did in Detroit kind of quietly, certainly in that playoff series. That's something he did in Detroit kind of quietly that, you know, he played through injuries because he was a lot tougher than people give him credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of a continuing theme with Grant Hill. And but there were some decent years, and they ended up getting, he played with Dwight Howard a little bit in Orlando, if I recall correctly.
Yes,
and
did.
I remember going through some old numbers recently. He actually played in a Christmas Day game against the Pistons for Orlando. And then that year, I believe he was out come playoff time. And that's when the Pistons went up against Orlando in a playoff series, and Dwight Howard crew. This wasn't the, you know, the Tracy McGrady 3-1.
The 2007 playoff series. The Pistons swept the Pistons. The Magic were the 8 seed. Pistons were the 1 seed. And Grant Hill in that series, the only playoff series that Grant Hill actually played in that playoff series, the only playoff series Grant Hill played in as an Orlando Magic player. He averaged 15 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, 3.8 assists, shot a 50% effective field goal percentage in that 4-game series with a young Magic team that, you know, just was getting its first taste of the playoffs and ended up being the last game that Grant Hill ever played in a Magic uniform.
And interestingly enough, after that offseason, as this whole thing kind of ties together in some ways, and you mentioned the SI article, and I'll point out also that Grant did a podcast with Adrian Wojnarowski. It was about 10 days ago, so now check it out. It's really good. It's an hour-long conversation. It was outstanding. He goes over some of the Orlando times, the injuries, and, you know, spoiler alert, but he talked about, and when you think back of it, he talks about how he probably came back from injuries too quickly, and I know that like you said, the Orlando fans and really human nature of sports fans to think a guy who they were so excited to probably have come down there and look like the superstar that he was in Detroit and to not play at all. You know, you probably villainize him, even though he definitely didn't deserve it at the time. But he talked about how he was, you know, asked to be off his feet for, you know, months at a time and had to just like, shoot some free throws in Shaq's house down the street that he still had in Orlando at the time, and he'd watch games and they'd be on while he was shooting free throws in Shaq's gym. Just kind of a really interesting interview, really sheds light on that situation and his entire career, really eye-opening stuff from an eloquent guy who does really well with those types of situations, and we hear him on college basketball broadcasts to this day and everything. But after that playoff series that you just talked about, Grant ended up going to Phoenix, but during that offseason, this is when the Pistons were trying to get back to the finals after getting there in 04 for the championship in 05, getting to the seventh game. They bring in Flip Saunders after Larry Brown leaves, and they just can't get back. They're in the Eastern Conference Finals. They lose. And they're trying to figure out ways to retool. Grant Hill at that time, actually, according to him, was really close to coming back to Detroit and being with the Pistons that offseason as being maybe one of the missing pieces on the wing off the bench for that team, which would have been a really interesting bookend and maybe would have made him more of a beloved figure in Detroit these days. And he's not, you know, reviled or something like that in Detroit, but his numbers not in the rafters like some of the lesser players from the championship teams, like a Vinnie Johnson or a Rip Hamilton, guys that are, you know, very good players, but not Hall of Fame type players like Grant Hill is. And obviously Grant leaving after 6 seasons has a lot to do with the fact that he's not beloved here in Detroit, but he ends up going to Phoenix and really kind of reestablishing his career as an outstanding role player, as a guy who guarded Kobe Bryant at times and ended up, you know, playing with another very intelligent basketball player in Steve Nash and finding kind of some third legs for his career there out West.
Yeah. And that whole second phase of his career or third phase of his career, was really interesting to see. Obviously Phoenix very well known for their good training staff and medical team. But he only fed that reputation But he accepted a role and really redefined his career. Obviously didn't have the explosiveness or the raw athleticism that he had as a younger player that made him one of the top guys in the league. I mean, I think at Grant Hill's peak, he was probably one of the top 5, 6, 7 players in the league. He really did a good job kind of finding a second act, like you've seen a lot of veterans do, where he's able to play that supporting role and find a niche. And honestly, I don't know how you might think about this. Did that Phoenix turn cement his Hall of Fame credentials, or were they, you know, if he would have retired in 2000, you know, take out his Magic years, take out those Phoenix years, was he a Hall of Famer just based off his Duke USA basketball and Detroit Pistons exploits?
No, I think he needed that Phoenix run, and not that he was an all-star or anything like that at that time, but you know, you kind of needed to put up the, you know, say you played more than, you know, 12 years or so in the league. And for him to have that third act there, I think, and to kind of in some ways put behind all the injuries and everything that happened in Orlando and prove that he could be not only a pretty good player, but a very good player at times with a team that was winning and playing playoff games and on television, national television games against the Lakers, high profile stuff. And, you know, him showing that he can play some of the defense that maybe he wasn't getting the recognition for playing early on in his career. And quite simply wasn't playing great defense early on in his career and wasn't asked to because he was asked to do so much offensively. But when he's put with a guy like Steve Nash and put in a system like they had down in Phoenix, I do think he kind of needed that. If the whole career professional wise was just the Detroit era and then the Orlando era and then fizzles out, or just has the one Clipper season that he had at the end as maybe instead of Phoenix or something like that, I think he did need that in Phoenix. It was a nice way to kind of rehab what was such a promising career and ended up being really ultimately a disappointing one. And I think he would admit that too, just because of all the injuries that he had as he approached his prime and what should have been a strong time. But obviously in the Basketball Hall of Fame, they take their college careers into account too, because that's just how they do it with the Basketball Hall of Fame. And 4 years at Duke, couple national championships, 3 appearances in the national championship game. Just one of the more, you know, recognized and celebrated college athletes of our time for a team that's obviously very high profile in Duke. I think he needed that in Phoenix. Do you agree he would have been already a Hall of Famer with the getting off the plane and the crutches in Orlando?
You know, I tend to think that he would have been a Hall of Famer even if he didn't have that second act in Phoenix. The way I approach the Hall of Fame is the players that are in the Hall of Fame are the players that obviously statistically have an impact in the game, but more importantly, it's players who are essential to telling the story of basketball. And I feel like in the mid-90s, there are very few players who are vital to telling the story of basketball more than Grant Hill, because he was obviously such a key player for, you know, back-to-back national champions at Duke, and then came to the NBA and, you know, really kind of set the world on fire. He had 6 years is nothing to sneeze at, but he was playing 6 years at really an elite level. And I feel like if you left him out of the Hall of Fame completely, you would be missing a big piece of the story of basketball in the 1990s. Obviously him entering with Jason Kidd, I think is really sweet, is poetic in that they both won the Rookie of the Year that year. And both were just so transformative players. Like they were players who redefined their position in a lot of ways. And so, even though Grant Hill's time at the very, very top was pretty short compared to maybe some other guys. And I think, you know, there might be an argument that he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. But I just feel like he is such an essential piece of basketball history that leaving him out would be, you know, leaving out a huge part of what made basketball in the 1990s.
Really unbelievable. One of the stories that came out and some one of the details about Grant Hill going in is he's going to be the first Duke player to ever play. He ever gets to the Hall of Fame, which is hard to believe. Wow. But then you think about it, it's like a lot of these guys are really good.
He helped establish
players.
The Duke dynasty, I think. And I mean, Coach K's teams were good, but they were, I mean, he was part of Coach K's first national championship team, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys like, you know, apologies to Jay Billis, but guys like Danny Ferry kind of fizzled out in the NBA. Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley, of course, never really fulfilled their promise as great college players that never really became much in the NBA. Is there anything else on Grant Hill you want to touch on? I want to ask you about the current Magic a little bit going into this season, too.
Oh, sure. You know, not, I mean, the only thing that I would touch on is, you know, kind of like how you said, you know, Detroit fans were a little, you know, miffed when he left. You know, I know Magic fans have such a very weird relationship with Grant Hill because he was such just unfulfilled promise. You know, again, playing only four games his first year, you know, 14 is next year, 29 is next year, and then missing an entire season in 2004. You know, there's a lot of unfulfilled promise. And I remember distinctly when after that 2007 season, a lot of Magic fans were angry at Grant Hill for not coming back in 2008. I think a lot of Magic fans kind of had this notion that the Magic paid so much money for Grant Hill over the course of the previous seven seasons, and he didn't kind of give it back or take a discount to stay. When in reality, the Magic wanted to move on. They wanted to get kind of, not get Grant Hill out of the locker room because it was a problem, but they wanted to turn leadership over to Dwight Howard and Jameer Nelson. They just made the playoffs for the first time. They felt like they were ready to kind of step into that leadership role. And, you know, when you have the mentor there still in place, you don't take the full reins of the team. And that decision obviously turned out to be a good one because Orlando won the division the next year, lost again to the Pistons in the second round that season, and then eventually went on to the NBA Finals 2 years later in 2009. I remember Grant Hill coming back the first time with the Phoenix Suns, and he got booed. And it was a real debate. I remember reading in the Orlando Sentinel debate about whether Magic fans should boo Grant Hill. And it was kind of shocking to hear Magic fans boo Grant Hill, because if you followed the team fairly closely, you understood that this is a guy who did everything he could to play for this team, and his body just wouldn't allow it to happen. And I think fans' stances have softened on Hill in Orlando, at least, but I still run into fans. I still, you know, whenever I've talked about Grant Hill in the past, I still run into fans and followers who are angry at Grant Hill for not fulfilling the contract that he signed, the massive contract that he signed, even though 29 other teams would have signed Grant Hill to that exact same contract in 2000, even with the ankle injury lingering over him.
A big thanks to Philip Rossman Reich, the host of the Locked On Magic podcast. If you have any reaction to Grant Hill, anything we've talked about this week, or any thoughts about the Grant Hill era, Grant Hill possibly going up to the rafters in Detroit someday, and certainly going to the Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts this weekend, you want to defend him, you want to rip his legacy, whatever you want to do, call and leave a voice message or text this number, and we'll use your 2 cents here on the air, 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666-1546, 810-666, Sign of the Beast, and Vinnie Johnson, Joe D, Terry Mills, 1546. But give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Give us a like on Facebook at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. Give us a rating and review on iTunes while you're at it as well. Also, we'll have more with Brendan Welper from Tuesday's interview. Also, more with Philip Rossman Reich from today's interview. We'll put that up maybe tomorrow, maybe later in the week as kind of a bonus episode as well. Got some more Grant Hill content lined up for you this week as well. But again, Detroit Sports Collectibles in Clawson, hats, made in Detroit shirts, the golf simulator, the all sports simulator, football figurines, music posters, Lambeer and Mahorn poster from the Bad Boys days, all the beer hats, just great stuff that you didn't know that you definitely need from Detroit Sports Collectibles. DetroitCollectibles.net. You can get merchandise on their website as well. 661 South Main Street in Clawson, just south of 14 Mile. You can visit them on the weekends or set up an appointment on evenings during the week as well. 844-238-6277 to reach Jim and Ann there. Again, 844-238-6277. This has been the continuation of Grant Hill Week. Thanks for joining us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook. We'll have more from G. Hill and his era later on in the week. Talk to you guys soon.